everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast number 76. Today we are going to discuss all things movie, all things geek. We're even going to throw in some video game stuff in there today because E3 2010 is happening right now. But first, how about we introduce our panel? Well, first, I'm your host. I'm Bankman. What's up?
Are you asking yourself what's up?
I'm asking myself. Okay. I'm just going with it.
All right.
Okay, so who do we have with us today? We got Mazer.
Hello.
Hey, Mazer. How you doing today?
I'm good, except I ate a lot of gummy bears. And
he did. I saw him.
Yeah. I may have eaten half of a... like a 2-pound bag.
It's never good.
And my stomach feels all right now, but later, who knows?
Let's get through this quickly.
Don't know, Mazer is a gummy bear fiend. We've got Ben P with us today. Hello, Ben.
What's up, Dr. Bankman? How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You went to E3 today, didn't you?
I did. I'm excited about it. I'll talk about that later.
All right, awesome.
Later in the show.
Can't wait to hear about it. We've got P. Vader in the house. What's up?
What's up, Vankman?
Just living life, living the dream.
As they say in Hawaii, how's it, brah?
Who said that, Marv Albert? Who was it? Someone did that the other day.
It's true. They do say that in Hawaii. They do say, how's it, brah? So, yeah.
That's what they do.
Maybe, maybe we could do a whole podcast speaking in pigeon.
Ooh.
Pigeon talk. I don't know who can pull it off.
100th episode.
I think we could do it. I just don't think anyone would want to listen.
No one would be able to understand us.
No.
I don't think we'd be able to understand each other, which would be the funny part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They probably don't understand us already.
Very true.
So, you know, speaking in pigeon, we'll just throw everything into a crazy swirl of toilet paper going down a flushing toilet.
With chocolate.
Oh, hey, and that's Bob Neek. What's
yes,
up?
Yes, it is. Not much. How are you doing?
I'm great.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Yeah. That's great to hear.
Say hi to your mother for me.
Yeah, say hi to your mother for me. All right. So we're going to get right into it. We're going to go into the box office numbers this week. We're going to give you the top 5 movies. The Karate Kid, surprisingly, came in around $56 million this weekend. That was a surprise. I thought A-Team would definitely take it, but A-Team received less than half that. Bringing in $25.6 million. And we'll talk about both of those films after we get through this. Number 3, Shrek Forever After. In its fourth week in a row, dropped down to number 3 at $15.7 million. Get into the Greek, made $9.9 million, and that's at the number 4 spot. And number 5, Killers. That is the Ashton Kutcher... Katherine Heigl.
It needs no further explanation.
Okay, so we're going to move on. So that's your top 5 movies for this week. But I wanted to talk real quick. There were a couple movies, little lesser known films that opened up this week in limited release, fortunately. But hopefully they go wide. But I don't know. I just wanted to bring this up because it did open up limited release this weekend. Winter's Bone. Opened up in 4 theaters this weekend and brought in $84,000. Okay, I know it didn't make a lot of money. This is a movie I saw up at the Sundance Film Festival. And if you are in an area where this movie is playing, like L.A. or New York, pretty much, it's actually playing at the Arclight in Hollywood. So if you're in and around that area, Winter's Bone is a movie you should definitely go see because it is an incredible film, one of the best movies I've seen this year. And yeah, check it out. Go to the website, search it. We got the trailers and story synopsis and all that stuff. But yeah, Winter Bones is a great film, or Winter's Bone is a great film. So go check that out if it's in your area. And that's just a shout out to that. Okay, we're going to go on to some good times here. We're going to let everybody guess what's happening. We're doing This Week in Box Office History again. We're going back to the year 1990. I asked the Geek Tyrant crew what year they wanted to do, and 1990 was it. So the weekend of June 8th through 10th, what movie came in number one, or you know, somewhere in the top 10? If you could name a movie from 1990 that you think might be in there somewhere, shoot it out. What do you guys think?
I'm going to go with Hunt for Red October.
Hmm. Interesting. Good.
Should we all kind of guess?
Yeah,
everyone give
a guess.
Okay.
Everyone give all a right. guess. And I will say, if you make a guess that's on the top 10, I'll let you know. So
okay.
Hunt for Red October was number 9.
Nice.
On the
that was
list.
Good.
Wow.
Well done, sir.
Good.
Okay. P.
At $802,000, but that's after it's been in the theaters for 15 weeks.
Holy
so.
Crap. Okay.
Wow.
Nice. Let's get it.
All right. I'm going to guess Total Recall.
Ooh, look at you go. Total Recall came in at number 2.
Ooh.
Nice. Making $15 million in its second week in the theaters.
Nice.
Man. Wow.
Good.
I have no idea.
That is not on the list. You lose.
I'm just going to throw out Ninja Turtles. I have no idea why. But...
Nice.
Teenage
Mutant like
Ninja Turtles came in at number
wow.
7.
Nice.
Yes. There we go.
$1.5 million in its 11th week.
Nice.
So good guess, man.
That is good. I'm gonna break this. I have no idea. Absolutely, I can't even guess.
Howard the Duck.
Howard
no.
the Duck.
No, that's not
I wanted
right
to say
here.
Marmaduke. I don't know. I don't even know. I'm not even gonna try to guess. Karate Kid 3. I mean.
Karate Kid 3, not on. Man, everyone did a great job, though.
Except for me.
It's pretty impressive. number one in 1990, another 48 hours in its first
oh.
week in a row.
I would have never gone there.
Tip
no.
of my tongue.
Made $19.4 million. Number two, Total Recall. Number three, Back to the Future Part 3.
Wow,
made $7.6 million in its third week in theaters. Number four, Bird on a Wire. $4.8 million in its fourth week. Pretty Woman came in at number five. $4.4 million after it had been in theaters for 12 weeks.
For some reason, I think of that film as in like 92, 91.
Well, 90, 91, 92, it's all the same. You know, it's in there. Cadillac Man came in at number 6 at 1.7. Number 7, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Number 8, Firebirds. I don't even know. Where
Firebirds,
to
begin. I'm blanking on that.
Not sure
I am totally blanking on Firebirds.
What?
And they made $1.2 million. Then we had The Hunt for Red October, number 9. And number 10, Driving Miss Daisy. And its 24th week in theaters made $642,000.
Nice.
So that is This Week in Box Office History, June 8th through 10th, 1990. So, we learn something new every day, folks.
I take solace in knowing that we don't know anything about Firebirds. But by projecting myself into the future 20 years down the line, when people are like, killers? What is that?
Yeah.
I know
it's
nothing
exactly
about killers.
That's exactly what's going to happen. What's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, on to some reviews. We all saw movies this weekend. This weekend, The A-Team came out, and The Kung Fu Kid came out. It should be called The Kung Fu Kid. We know it's The Karate Kid, but it should be called The Kung Fu Kid because it makes more sense for the film. So why don't we start off with The A-Team?
This court is rendering guilty verdicts for this Alpha Unit, or A-Team, and incarceration in maximum security facilities for 10 years.
We are innocent.
Where's the plan, boss?
You actually sound worried.
Those men were your responsibility. Find them.
Hell no. I ain't stepping foot in any type of aircraft.
Man up! Get in the plane! We gotta finish the escape! Man up and get in there!
Putting the team back together.
How do you plan on stopping them?
Don't sweat them.
This just got exciting.
I'm BA. You're gonna be unconscious.
Just a heck of a beautiful place. Is it timeshare? I'd love to get in.
Good morning.
The A Team. Guys, who saw it?
I saw it. Mazer. I saw it. Neek, Mr. Neek.
Good, good.
Yeah, and P-Bay and I did not see it.
You didn't see it.
Well, the thing is, we
they missed their opportunity.
There's a story behind it.
I'll keep it short because nobody gives a crap. Basically, we got to the theater 40 minutes early for the screening and could not find parking in a parking garage with faulty meters on it, where it told us that there was a bunch of open spaces on various levels when in fact there were zero. So 40 minutes later, we parked and got in, like, a minute before the movie started, and they're like, yeah, you can't come in here. So.
Oh, that's weak sauce, those bastages.
Yes. Yeah, so I guess we'll be drilling you guys with questions and such about the A-Team.
Cool.
Well, the A-Team was freaking awesome. I know it's not, it could get bad. I could see why it would get bad reviews. It's not a movie that's going to win any awards. You know from the trailer what you're getting yourself into. It's just going to be a fun popcorn flick. And that's exactly what it was. I had a blast watching this movie in the theaters. It was just incredibly fun. The action was over the top, exciting, fun. The characters were great. The movie just reminded me. It brought back those 18 memories of me when I was a kid watching the show. And it had all that good stuff in it that they just transferred over with a bigger budget and a lot more killing. Because people actually died in this one. What'd you guys think?
I thoroughly enjoyed this film. I know people have described it as nostalgia porn.
And
some people have likened, comparing this to other remakes of its type, Charlie's Angels, and all that. And it's funny because I've heard critics actually say they liked Charlie's Angels better. I would strongly disagree with what they said.
I would profusely disagree.
Yeah.
I would disagree so much that it would make me throw up. That's how much I would disagree with that statement.
I disagree with Mr. T's comments. I also think that the first 10 minutes of this film, someone said it in the comments on the 18, what do you guys think of 18 posts? And someone said the first 10 minutes is worth the price of admission. It was a mini 18 episode, and it just establishes all the characters so well. For people,
it does
who,
it fast too, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it's for people who never had seen A-Team and are not familiar with these characters.
Even if you have seen A-Team, it was still freaking awesome.
Yeah, you felt like you had a fresh introduction to all of these characters that you had known for years watching growing up.
And I think if you're, movie snobs or whatever, I think they probably wouldn't like this movie because it's the dialogue's cheesy, the story, a freaking lot of holes, it's littered with stuff that just doesn't connect, and things that don't really make that much sense. But it's the A-Team, so it really doesn't matter. You know? You just, you take it as it is and enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best word for this movie is fun. I mean, you could nitpick all you want. You know, you could thumb your nose at this movie. It's not going to be critically acclaimed or anything. But it was just a lot of fun. I mean, when we walked out of the movie, Mazur said the movie was pitch perfect. And that was exactly it. It was just a whole lot of fun. It was cheesy. It was campy. That's exactly what the show was. And, you know, you...
But
yeah.
I was just going to say, who's everybody's favorite character in the movie?
I don't have a favorite character.
Murdoch was mine. I thought Murdoch was freaking hilarious.
Murdoch stole
the show.
Yeah.
I
would say I don't have a favorite character because I feel like every single character in the A-Team was extremely well realized, and I don't think any character was particularly shortchanged or used so much that there was kind of it was the Murdoch show or the Hannibal show or the
Baraka
show.
Very equal parts in it, which was great.
And I think it's rare to find real chemistry between two actors or say three actors. But four actors? I mean, come on. These guys need to have a sequel. And I think, okay, aside from some of the, quote, movie physics in this film, because I think any action film originated from a TV show should have movie physics, I think this could have a real enjoyable sequel to it. More so than the Charlie's Angels sequel. I mean... If people liked the first Charlie's Angels and we were able to get a sequel out of that one, for goodness sake, give us an A-Team sequel.
Seriously?
All right, so from what I'm hearing, you liked the way that it introduced the characters for people that haven't seen the show. Is that a comparison that you could draw to J.J. Abrams' Star Trek? Like, that same kind of tone-wise, that kind of thing, where it kind of makes it fresh for a new audience?
It really happened a lot faster. Like, literally, it happened within 15 minutes.
It was incredible how fast. Like, I mean, the pace, it set the pacing for the rest of the movie as well. It was just, yeah.
And they are all over the world, the country. They do so many things. There's no fat on this film. Everything is extremely lean, and... It doesn't seem like there could have been a scene to cut out. I mean, if you did, it would just be extra character stuff.
Yeah, and that's the stuff we're looking for. You're not left behind or lost. It's really fast, but it's paced perfectly. So you're totally caught up. You totally know who these people are and what they're about. And they do it perfectly. They nail it.
As far as editing and stuff goes, was it the kind of quick cut editing combined with the shaky cam stuff that we've seen in action movies over the past few years? Because you keep saying that it moves quickly, but does it...
There's no Paul Greengrass shaky cam.
Okay,
getting there.
Well, that's good. Yeah. But I mean, does the editing give you a sense of place, like geography, what's going on in the scenes, or is it more kind of character centric, where you're just relying on knowing what these characters are going to do, as opposed to having the filmmakers show it to you?
No, you get a pretty solid feeling of geography. The cuts are quick, but I think it's because they're able to get away with a lot of it because they rely on the shorthand that has been established by other films. There's a lot of sequences where they just do a cut, and if you really thought through, you could have gone, well, that should have taken an extra 15 or so seconds from then to go here to here, but they just cut out all that stuff, and it just feels a lot quicker. So it's just more relying on conventional action as opposed to trying to reinvent the wheel.
I was interested, because I'm a UFC fan, just Quinn Rampage's role in the movie. Obviously, I know he's Mr. T. How was he at that role?
He was fine. I mean, he didn't, you know, do as bad a job as Mr. T did when he did it, you know? It was
His character actually has the only character arc in the entire film, believe it or not.
Yeah.
There is an actual change for his character through the film. Everyone else is just drawn out and as humanly cartoony as they can be. I think it was great. And he broke some fools, and he nice. Did throw people and break people. And
literally
break.
Broke people.
Yeah, he literally broke them.
Within minutes. So
I think there's one particular action sequence
where I think he takes out about five or six guys in the, probably about 20 seconds.
Nice.
With his bare hands.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, Mr. T is not happy with his new BA, but I think this is a newer generation.
Personally, for me, I've gone, I guess what I'll call media dark on the movie The Expendables. I haven't seen any trailers or anything like that because I'm such a huge fan of Stallone and those kinds of.
You're doing that insane. Is beyond me.
I know, I'm doing it for that, and P. Vader and I are both are doing it for Inception. Where
I'm on with the Inception.
Yeah, we saw the first teaser trailer. I haven't seen anything else after that.
I'm just going to... You guys are nuts.
But from what I could tell, P. Vader's been telling me, he's been kind of giving me some grief when TV spots come on for the Expendables, and I'm like looking away, and he's like, dude, it's really... It's not going to be the same thing as Inception. Like you can go ahead and look. It's really, but I've gone this far, so I'm going to go ahead. But anyway, my entire point being, from P. Vader's kind of disparaging comments about what the Expendables looks like. Do you guys think that this kind of action team up is going to be comparable to something like that? You know, I have no basis because I haven't seen any of the footage from the Expendables, but. Do you think it's going to be, like, better, worse? Does the chemistry look better between these actors than it does in that film? I'm just kind of interested
in the comparison.
I think
it's going to be just as fun. I don't think there's going to be a better movie. Like, I don't know if Expendables is going to be any better than the A-Team or the A-Team be any better than the Expendables. I think it's because... I think they're two kind of the same things where it's just these fun, over-the-top, badass action movies, you know? Both of them have, you know, obviously, I think Expendables may have an edge on the A-Team for the fact that it's got one of the most craziest cast ever of action stars.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I think I'm on the opposite end. I think A-Team has the advantage. I think Expendables, with all its cast and all its cameos, we just had Valentine's Day come out. And that had a lot of names, and it wasn't a good film. Just because you have a lot of names doesn't seem like there's going to be chemistry. Jet Li, great on his own. Stallone, great on his own. Statham, great on his own. I've yet to see any of those three characters, I think, really have chemistry with another actor on screen. And
the exception of Tango and Cash, I have to butt in.
Okay, Tango and Cash.
And Kurt Russell.
But Kurt Russell is everyone's buddy. And I think it's more Russell than Stallone.
That's probably true.
But yeah, I don't see those three having a kind of energy that feels compatible together. It just seems like they're lone guys and they're just going to happen to be in the same film.
Okay.
And I think A-Team, I mean, Liam Neeson, the guy just did Taken and he's doing Hannibal and he does dish out some more whoop ass, let's just say.
Skills.
Yeah, he does, you know.
Very particular set of them.
Yeah. He has skills. Yeah. So, I feel like this film, I mean, just based on how much it's made so far, it's not going to go any further than what it is now. And, I don't know. I was very happy. I think if it boils down to this, to describe, if you loved the energy and the feeling in the trailer, that's exactly what you're going to get out of the A-Team film. Some films false advertise the action, false advertise the characters, and I think the trailer did an exceptionally good job of setting your expectations correctly for the A-Team.
Yeah, it seems like a common sense thing to say is like, oh yeah, if you like the trailer, you like the movie, but a lot of times it's not like that at all, it's good to see that, you know, a movie is actually advertising itself in the way
it lives
it actually
up to
is.
Its trailer, which isn't always the case. Yeah.
That's good.
So yeah, I definitely recommend it, and I think everyone here on the panel that's seen it recommends it as well. So go out and watch the movie, because I think you're going to like it. So that's... A-Team, good, everybody?
Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. How about Kung Fu Kid? I mean, Karate Kid.
I feel like we're on a quest to start a new life. Go ahead.
Ask him, what's your name in Chinese?
Xu Shen Mojima.
Dude, I'm from Detroit.
Welcome to Beijing. Gonna do something? I just want to go home. This is home.
I thought you were just a maintenance man.
The only way to stop them is to face them.
I will teach you real kung fu.
I was the only one rooting for this film.
I saw it. Yeah. I saw it grudgingly. I went and saw it because my kid wanted to see it.
I dragged my wife to the film.
Literally.
So,
yeah.
So, going into this, going into The Karate Kid.
Hang on 1 second. Bob Neek, did you see it?
No, I didn't see
okay.
it.
Okay, all right. And P. Vader and I did not see it either. Okay. So, this is going to be a Mazer Venkman combo. So.
All right, look. Going into this movie, I had very negative feelings for it. I'm a big fan of the original film. I grew up on it. You know, it was one of those movies in my life that I grew up watching. And it was definitely, you know, when I found out they were remaking it, I was just pissed off that they would even think about remaking the Karate Kid. It's like remaking the Karate Kid to me. It also kind of has the same feel of like remaking the Goonies. You know, it's like no, you just can't do that. That being said, after I saw the movie, well, during the movie, after whatever, I ended up liking it.
Wow, that's surprising.
Dude, tell me about it.
Yeah, I did not expect to hear you say that.
No, that's what was so crazy. Is like I walked into this movie with like a horrible attitude, with horrible expectations, and I walked out of it, you know, saying, "How can I not like that movie? Because it was a solid, well made film. Dialogue, story, the Chinese setting, everything about it was, you know, was solid. There was the acting and everything. It was a good film. And it shocked the hell out of me that it actually remade The Karate Kid into a really good movie.
I'm shocked right now listening to you say this.
Yeah, well, I didn't expect it. Like, if I go in with a bad attitude towards a film, I'll always look for the faults. Yeah. You know? That's just how I am. I always look for like, you know, the acting sucked, or oh, this terrible dialogue. I always look for like something to tear the movie apart on. And this didn't have it. Like,
yeah.
I was looking for it and I'm like, I can't not like this film because it was good.
Yeah, I'm completely in shock right now. I can't believe that I'm hearing this. But Mazer,
dude, I'm telling you, it's like my favorite part of the movie, besides the setting, because I love the Chinese setting. I mean, they take you to China, they show you like these awesome sights, and you know, take you through the culture and everything. And it's really awe-inspiring to see all this stuff. And, like, I've never wanted to really go to China. And after I watch this movie, I'm like, I want to go to China. I want to go see this stuff, like, for real, you know?
This nice. Is insane. This movie is inspiring you to want to take a world trip. What is going on? I need to see this movie, I guess. Jeez. Yeah.
See, I feel validated because I was the only one pushing for this film. I said last week, I am going to watch The Karate Kid. And no one was excited about it. And I'm glad at least Venkman has seen this. For me, just, I don't know, we all are critics of trailers, and I just talked about the A-Team and all that. But for me, it felt, just from watching it and the clips that were released, it seemed like there was intelligence and heart put into the making of this film. And that is definitely what is on display.
See, I didn't see that in the trailers at all, but I saw it in the movie. Like, this movie has a heart and soul behind it that I was not expecting at all. The relationship between Dre and Mr. Miyagi, Mr. Han, is such a solid, strong relationship. And Jaden Smith and Jackie Chan had a fantastic amazing connection. They had great chemistry together up on that screen.
I would say this is the most emotionally powerful Jackie Chan film for him.
Oh, I have never. It pushed him to actually act.
Yeah, I've never. I mean, it wasn't the most. It wasn't Oscar or whatever. I would just say it was the most emotionally moving Jackie Chan performance. And I think just because none of his other films would allow him to have that this type of feel to it.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's just, you know, it's just an amazing story. And it's a young black kid who's not a teenager like in the original Karate Kid, who's in China. I mean, in so many different ways is he an alien in this environment, and to see just to see this kid, and you feel for him. I think for what, within the first 2 minutes of this film, you understand who this kid is.
Yeah,
and you're on board. It doesn't take that long for you to go on this emotional journey and feel for, because it. I think as a kid, you've been in that situation where you have been totally emotionally been overwhelmed, and I think we see that here, and it's something I easily connected with.
Now, one of the craziest parts of the movie, one of the best parts of this movie, is the fight choreography. Absolutely incredible.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
really?
Unbelievable.
Wow.
Because that is definitely not on display in the trailers at all.
They kept it secret because it is amazing.
Oh, it was jaw-droppingly good. Like, I was sitting here watching it, and I'm just in awe. My kid, who wanted to see the movie, is covering her eyes because it's so intense, and she can't watch it because it's so brutal.
All right, now you're making me think it's like a Bourne movie. Is that?
Insane. There's a few fights. It's so brutal. You're just like, is that really him getting all those punches, getting thrown on the ground, getting flipped in the air and falling? Is that? I mean, it is.
So they don't shy away from it then. Like.
They do not
shy away at all. This is like, it's hard pounding, and they don't use. You can tell they don't use. There's no slow motion or anything used. This is all like real time speed, you know, and it's just incredible.
It feels like they're real. I don't know if what they did or whatever, but there's moments where you just see someone just get hit in the face, and like, you can see the energy go through their body, and you're like, how did they fake that? Or maybe it's not faked.
No joke. Jay, it looked like Jaden Smith got his freaking ass kicked in this movie countless times. I'm telling you, it was brutal to watch these Chinese kids beat up on the character Dre in this film. Not only did they like beat him up, you know, it wasn't like punching in the stomach and kicking in the face. I mean, it had that stuff, but it was like, it was to the extreme, you know? I mean, these kids use their kung fu to freaking destroy the character Dre, you know?
It sounds like the end of Kick-Ass. I'm not going to really spoil what scene I'm talking about, but I'm sure you guys and the listeners who've seen Kick-Ass will know what I'm talking about. As far as the scene of violence towards children,
that's the thing, and that's the thing. You're watching some preteen kids, you know, kicking each other's asses hard.
Yeah, and the tournament
I'm watching this, and I'm like, awesome.
I'm watching it, and I'm like, I don't think I've ever seen anything like this before outside of Kick-Ass.
Yeah, and the villains, let's say, in this film, they make Cobra Kai look like a bunch of frat boys.
Dude, they could kick Cobra Kai's asses all over the place.
And these kids are like 5 years younger than Cobra Kai, so it's not even a contest of where it is. And the end move makes the crane look so
archaic.
No, it just makes the crane look like this little limp,
very dated
noodle. Just so, yeah, it looks so dated if you think about it compared to what they end up doing in this film. I'm just wondering, like, who did the choreography? I know Jackie Chan is in the film, and usually he's very involved in his films. it feels like it has his hand through a lot of the action. Especially there's one scene where he fights, what, five kids? Six kids?
Yeah, that
without
was awesome.
Throwing a
you're
single
one,
punch
you're
at them.
You're watching an old man fighting these kids. You're like,
yeah.
This is cool. Yeah, it was a really, really fun movie. Very well made. I was shocked by how good it was. And this whole time I've been bashing it. Like, I'm not going to hide that I've been against this film from the beginning. I've been bashing it on every post that I've had a chance to bash it on. So here I am telling you that this movie is really a great film.
Well, I think this took the best parts of Karate Kid and left some of its worst parts behind. I think it picked up on alienation. It picked up on the transgenerational friendship. It picked up on the whole thing of self-worth and overcoming fear and all those types of things. I feel like just to judge this film superficially, just because of so much love for the original Karate Kid, I think, I mean, obviously after hearing what we're saying, I think maybe a lot of people are going to change their minds, but I just leave an open mind for the Karate Kid.
All right, one thing I will give the original, though, is that it had Elizabeth Shue.
Yeah.
Unless she has a cameo.
There's no Elizabeth Shue
All right.
In this movie.
There is an age-appropriate
yeah, that would be completely...
Chinese girl.
Yeah.
So, that story was fairly well realized, and it also puts on display the differences between between the American and Chinese cultures.
Well, from what you guys are saying, this sounds like, I don't know how many people on this panel have seen Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift.
Oh, so, yeah.
But from that movie and from what I know of the trailers and kind of what you guys are talking about, it seems like this version of the Karate Kid is what that film was trying to achieve emotionally, as far as, because we've seen this kind of story before with a kid being, you know, taken out of his country and put in, it's the fish out of water story, and you know, engulfed in this other culture and trying to deal with those kinds of differences and stuff. But you guys, from what it sounds like, there's like a true emotional core to this that's provided by that kind of anchoring relationship with Jackie Chan and Jaden Smith's character that something like Tokyo Drift just, it didn't even try for, really. Like, just didn't even... It was more... I hate to keep comparing various films to other films, but that's all I've got to go on since I didn't see the movies. But, yeah, I don't know. It just sounds like, you know, we've seen this story before, but from what you guys are saying, it's definitely still worth checking out and probably an example of the right way to tell the story.
Definitely. Yeah. I think there's... I mean, this makes China look like an amazing place and not in a way that spotlights their things in a way that's overly
gimmicky.
It's just authentically who they are.
Yeah.
But they also don't talk about things that would make them look bad as well. But that's not the point of the film.
Mm-hmm.
I think the comparison to Tokyo Drift is probably an all right comparison, especially since that was my favorite of the Fast and the Furious films, which is funny because it's the one that's just completely out of all, it has none of the characters from the original except for like one
cameo at the very end.
So
yeah,
I definitely recommend you go check this movie out if you haven't already. I think you guys are going to be pleasantly surprised. So, there you have it. How about we talk about... Someone went to E3 today?
Yeah,
who was that?
That was me, Ben P. I had the chance to go to E3. This is the first time I've been to this convention. First time I've been to really any convention as a member of the press, which was kind of cool. And this, the E3 is the... I think it's Electronics Entertainment Expo, I think is what it stands for, and it's essentially a giant video game convention that's going on in Los Angeles for the next couple days. So I had a chance to play some really sweet games, and I'll just talk about just two of them, I guess. The Scott Pilgrim, I know you guys are looking forward to that movie. I'm really looking forward to that movie. Because I read all the graphic novels and they're fantastic, and I would highly recommend that to anybody. Also, I don't know if you guys have seen our posts about it and all over the web and whatever, but there's a Scott Pilgrim video game that's coming out for the PlayStation Network. It's available to download, or it will be in August, right before the movie comes out, and then it's coming to Xbox sometime shortly thereafter, kind of undetermined right now. But it's a... Go online and check out the footage. I posted some footage, so just go to Geek Tyrant and search Scott Pilgrim video game and you'll see it. It's like River City Ransom and Double Dragon and like the old school arcade version of the Ninja Turtles games, where it's like
Final
this
Fight?
This kind of or yeah, like Turtles in Time yeah. or something. It's like one of these side scrolling like almost 8-bit games that where you can like kind of pick up baseball bats and beat people and just like move and pick up coins and stuff. It's really nice. Really awesome. And I'm sure since it's going to be available for download on the PlayStation Network, it's probably not going to run nearly as much as a full price game or whatever. So it's just, it's a kick to nostalgia, a kick back to nostalgia, which Scott Pilgrim and that entire universe, as anybody can tell from the trailer, is highly influenced by video games and video game culture anyway. Mm-hmm. So for Brian Lee O'Malley, the creator of Scott Pilgrim, to be able to work with Ubisoft and create this game in this very specific way feels like him just kind of paying homage to the games that inspired him to create Scott Pilgrim in the first place. So it's this very cyclical type of cool thing that they've got going on. And the game is really fun, very addicting, and definitely give it a shot if you have a chance later on in August when it comes out.
I'm excited that they went this way, because usually movie tie-in video games
are some of the worst ones out there,
and it's because they have no time. If they were given 3 extra months or so, it would probably be a very highly polished game. But what they really have time for is to make these downloadable content games that you can sell. I mean, I've bought several games off the PlayStation Store and the Xbox Arcade Store, and
yeah.
those are great games. And for them to actually go, you know what, instead of us trying to make this crazy full-fledged game and
yeah,
spend,
and, like, get mocap of Michael Cera and all this kind of ridiculous, you know, have all the voice come in and, you know, the actors come in and do their voices.
Let's make a quality throwback 8-bit game of Scott Pilgrim. I'm happy they did that.
Yeah, it looks really cool.
I hope they do that with more games. I think it's funny because they released a Prince of Persia game in... attached to the Prince of Persia film, and it is not doing so well. And I've actually heard people say that the game is actually good, and it's because it wasn't intended to be attached to the film, but because they tied it in with the film, which is doing so terribly right now.
Yeah, people are just making that connection.
Yeah, they're just going, oh, movie game, crap, pass. When it's actually, it was just the next Prince of Persia. They just happened to go, oh, let's make it look like him, and we'll just release it around the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely... I mean, if I see that Scott Pilgrim for, like, $3-4,
yeah,
I'll definitely buy it.
Yeah, I would probably buy it for 10 or something. It's just that much fun. It really is just like a callback to those old school games. And it's multiplayer. You can play with up to 4 people.
Alright, connect with your friends online.
Yeah, so it's pretty great. And then it's funny how we're talking about, we wish these games would go back and kind of regress in technology almost. Because the next one I'm going to talk about, which is Tron Evolution, is actually... a leap forward in technology. It's going to be one of the first video games to be playable in 3D. I think Sony made the announcement yesterday or something that it's going to be compatible with the 3D TVs that are out now and have been out for a little while or whatever. The gameplay is supposed to be exactly the same if you don't have a 3D TV, so don't let that change your mind or whatever. I got to play this game, and it's a blast. It's the typical, like, the first thing that you think of when anybody really thinks of Tron is the light cycles. even though if you go back and watch the original movie, it's a very small part of it, but that's just kind of like the iconic thing that is stuck in people's minds. But there is the demo version of the game that I got to play was half and half split between a light cycle thing, which was really cool, and a kind of third person, just like roaming fighting type of game that is mission based from what I can tell. And it's basically like kind of like Prince of Persia, where it's got some parkour elements like wall running and stuff like that, and you get to throw the kind of rings on your back. You have like an unlimited supply of these rings that you see them using in the trailers and stuff, and you can do, you know, just the typical kinds of like acrobatics and stuff that we've come to to be popular, yeah, in the past couple of years with the rise of parkour and all that kind of stuff. But the fighting, it's basically like Batman Arkham Asylum, like the fighting mechanics
just
or something
fluid,
like that.
But simple.
Yeah, exactly. It's combo based. It's very, you can use your rings or just go straight hand to hand combat, jumping, throwing, all the stuff at the same time. Yeah, very fluid. And the graphics are insane. Like, they look just like the footage that we've seen from Tron Legacy, and that's because Tron Evolution, the game, is a prequel to Tron Legacy, so I guess it takes place in between the two films.
Yeah.
The visual, like the production design, it just like almost 100% transfers over into the game with like the really neon blues and oranges and blacks and stuff, and the really cool color palettes that they've got going on. Translate both into the kind of third-person fighting aspect and the light cycle stuff, which was really cool also. What were you going to say?
I think they've been in development with this game as long as they've been in development with this movie, which has been about almost just coming up on 3 years.
I think you're right about that.
I think that's the reason there's a particular quality to this film.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they started... we've got it now.
Release
the
first trailer. Now come up with the game.
Yeah. We've got a year and a half. We have a year and a half to go to make this game.
Yeah.
It takes at least a couple years
to
get a good one.
I remember hearing that they've been working on this for a while. I don't know the exact date.
Do you guys remember
Tron
2.0?
I remember hearing about it. I never played it or anything like
this
that.
This was a game, I forgot when it came out, but it was like...
It was a long time ago.
And I just remember visually seeing this, quote, update to the Tron world, and... it never felt to me like it was truly the next Tron.
I just think the technology wasn't ready yet.
Yeah.
It's there now, and that's why I love the
idea. Just even in the art design for what they had done for it, compared to the way they're going in the film, it feels...
Well, it's a huge part of...
so much better.
...of Tron Evolution and Tron Legacy. It's just the overall look of it, and like really making you believe that you're immersed in this computer world of bits and bytes and these kinds of motherboard looking systems and stuff. It looks fantastic, and definitely give it a chance when it comes out, because it's a lot of fun. And that's pretty much it from my first day of E3. You know, go to the site, check out the E3 tag, and look at all the coverage we've been posting. And then Dr. Venkman, you're going to be joining me at E3 tomorrow, is that right?
Hell yeah!
Epic. Oh, awesome. Okay, cool. So yeah, we'll have a chance to cover some more stuff and get a chance to test out some more games for everybody, and maybe report back next week if we find anything else worth talking about.
Definitely. Awesome. Yeah, I can't wait to go tomorrow. It's going to be incredibly fun.
Amazing stuff has been coming out of that E3 convention. The Xbox 360 Slim.
Yeah.
They finally... and, you know, kind of more song.
Hey, it's not called the Slim.
It's not Slim?
It's the new Xbox 360.
It's just called the new Xbox.
Ah. they also, I'm sure you guys know this, they've retitled Project Natal to Kinect, which is K-I-N-E-C-T, which is like a weird melding of kinetic and connect. So, I don't know. I saw people demoing that today. And it looks okay. It's just a blatant ripoff of the Wii. but, you know, I guess probably... And PlayStation has this thing out now called the Move, which
I think
does
the
same thing.
I like
the
way PlayStation is doing the Move. Natal is kind of a different engine because it's more... it's based off the camera. And if you guys saw that one demo, it wasn't for E3, but it was an interactive character which would actually... it could recognize your face and it could have a conversation with you and read your emotion.
Really?
Yeah,
it was incredible.
Kind of a freaky AI-ish type of thing. I think
that's for Microsoft?
That's okay. Connect.
Right.
But I like what Sony's doing, which is the Move, which basically makes the Wii control, the whole six axis, all that stuff, look like mush, because the Move is a one-to-one. So how you move it is exactly how it is.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about the angles. Because I've played the Wii a bunch of times, and the reason I don't like it is because when I play Wii Golf or something, for example, I'll go into a backswing, and it will swing forward. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, I'm sure everybody's had these kinds of issues with it. And that from what you're saying, it sounds like that's not going
to
be even possible.
It's one-to-one where
the PlayStation.
Where a video game with sword fighting is an actual practical thing.
Yeah.
As opposed to just kind of, I can, if I waggle this way and quote waggle that way, I can kind of make it.
Yeah,
work.
Then it'll just like dash up and down.
Yeah.
It actually moves where you're moving it.
If you take a look at those presentations, because it is freaky how precise it is. They just basically take a video of you and the demonstrator, and they just show a lightsaber working, and it's not the lightsaber is kind of connected, composited in. It's right on there.
Yeah.
And when he has a sword, it's right on there. So everything is extremely precise.
Yeah.
So I'm more excited with that. Because if I'm going to have one of these peripheral type things, I want it to be precise.
Yeah, accuracy is a huge deal. It seems.
Yeah, I don't want to feel like I'm encumbered by the interface.
Yeah.
And Kinect is going to be its own thing. And it's not going to be as precise.
Yeah.
And Sony already has a camera thing that they do this type of stuff. They just aren't building in that particular direction.
Yeah, it's interesting that Nintendo was the first ones to kind of pioneer this whole thing, though.
I'm still disappointed that they did not announce a Wii HD. Because for me, I would love one, but for me, because it's not HD, it's not, for me, exciting.
It's not that far up your priority list.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a big deal now. I mean, HD is kind of becoming the norm, and for them to kind of be dropping behind.
Yeah,
like
when our cell phones are beginning to approach high def resolution, then maybe they should think about making their console work for that.
So hopefully Dr. Vangman and I will be able to kind of report back on all of those fronts and maybe test out some of that stuff and give you a first-hand response at it.
Yep, for sure. Okay, so moving on to some movie news. Today it was announced that Sam Raimi is officially attached to direct the Wizard of Oz prequel for Disney, which is being called Oz the Great and Powerful. This is the same movie that Robert Downey Jr. Kind of attached himself to. He was in talks to star in it, but I guess since Sam Raimi has attached himself to the movie, Robert Downey Jr. is now also going to be in the movie. So,
and he's playing Dorothy, right?
Yes. Robert Downey Jr.
Now,
is
what does
Dorothy.
This do
and
to...
He's
playing, yeah.
What?
What does this do to Downey's current slate? Where does that fit in?
I have no idea when this thing's going to film. I mean,
there's another Iron Man, right? And then we doing...
No.
Avengers.
Avengers. He's got the Avengers. He's got a film called Gravity and then Sherlock Holmes 2. So somewhere in between there... I'd say probably somewhere between Gravity and the Avengers, maybe. I have no idea. But his next year is completely booked, and he won't have time to do anything ever again.
See, actors can jump around to projects a bit more than a director who's locked into something for 2
years.
Yeah,
exactly. They just do their thing and then move to their next
project. Well, at least 2 years.
Yeah.
if it's going to be good.
Yeah, as Guillermo del Toro can tell you. what's the storyline behind Oz the Great and Powerful? Because I know is basically what you said, where Downey's involved and Sam Raimi is involved, and that's about all I know.
Well, I guess it's an original story that Disney's writers that came up with this original story as a prequel to The Wizard of Oz. This tells the story of the wizard, who Robert Downey Jr. will play, and tell his story of how he ended up from Kansas, because he was from Kansas too, and how a tornado transported him as well to the mysterious world of Oz, where when he gets there, he's mistaken for a know-it-all.
Can I make a really bad joke real quick?
You can make the worst joke you've ever wanted to make in your life.
It's not even a real joke. It's just this movie should end with some sort of body-switching device where Downey and Michael Emerson change roles, and then Michael Emerson lands in the hot air balloon on the island from Lost.
That would be awesome.
Peter doesn't get that reference because he hasn't seen all of Lost, but and I won't ruin it for the other people who haven't seen Lost. But go watch Lost, even though it's over. But anyway, all right, sorry. Go ahead.
That's fine. So yeah, it's just the prequel telling the story of the wizard and how he became the Wizard of Oz.
Okay. Doesn't this kind of reek of Alice in Wonderland syndrome to you? Like, unnecessary...
It definitely seems like an unnecessary film. It seems like this is definitely a studio movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I love Sam Raimi as a director. I think he's made some great films. I'm a big fan of his. This will be his first directing gig since Drag Me to Hell.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, why is he doing this movie?
Yeah, it's a shame because
it doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah,
it feels like this could be his. Okay, if I make this Oz film, can I make this film?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's what it feels like to me.
It's kind of a Clooney deal where he makes another Ocean's movie so he can make The Men Who Stare at Goats or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. It's you got to play their game. And unless you're like Gibson, where you're gonna put your own money and your own skin in the game, which people just don't do.
Yeah,
they do not do.
Yeah,
no matter how much money they have.
I mean, he's got the World of Warcraft film that he's still working on.
Yeah,
there hasn't been much movement on that though. That was announced what, 2 years ago?
Yeah,
maybe even like 2007.
I'm more excited to see the Social Network film from Fincher than I am this World of Warcraft film. I mean, even if it's epic, it just seems like I'm completely uninterested with going to this world.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not, okay? I think World of Warcraft has the ability to be as epic as Lord of the Rings was, which is why I'm excited for it, to see what Sam Raimi actually brings to that. Because I think it could be a pretty freaking incredible film.
As long as Mr. T plays a role
saying.
In the World of Warcraft movie, like he does in this commercial.
But yeah, it just seems like an odd choice for Raimi to make. And you're probably right. It's probably, will allow him to do something else for Disney somewhere down the line. But
I mean, I don't want to completely, badmouth the film
from
the
get-go. Well, he is. He makes a great addition to the film. It's not going to hurt that he's directing it.
Right.
I mean, the guy's he's a strong, talented director that will take whatever Disney throws at him and turn it into something watchable, you know?
And Downey, I mean, his career speaks for itself, so especially in recent years. But
I just hope they do something to differentiate Downey as Oz, because I feel like, wisecracking, intelligent, charismatic, good-looking guy. I mean, that's all in his wheelhouse.
It makes me wonder if it's going to be Tony Stark in Oz.
What are they going to do to make this feel different?
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree. So, I don't know. That's that. I mean, Sam Raimi is going to direct it, and we're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah. If they had said this was going to be a dark film and it was going to be directed by Sam Raimi and have Edward Norton in it, I would go, what in the world were they thinking? But with Downey, it just seems like they're just phoning it in.
Yeah, that's true. Just the mention of Downey, you already can kind of picture how the movie is going to play out in your head, which is is not good, that we're kind of pigeonholing Downey into a certain type of performance, but that's what he's given us to work with over the past few years.
Yeah, with the exception of Tropic Thunder.
That's true, yeah.
But
even that was comedic, and most of his roles recently have been relatively comedic. I guess The Soloist probably wasn't as straight-up comedy as the rest of it, but...
What else?
Scanner Darkly?
And Zodiac.
Ah, yes.
So, I mean...
Okay.
I mean, he's... But those have been a little bit further than we have been of late.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially when they describe the Oz character as being... Yeah, okay. Let's move on.
Ben, you wanted to discuss the new Ghost Rider film, the sequel.
Yeah.
The one that will star, you know, Nick Cage is in talks to reprise his role.
Really?
And the Crank guys, the guys that wrote and directed Crank, are in talks to direct this bad boy.
That was the news.
I have no desire to see at all, but what's up?
Why? You wrote up this piece, and I hadn't seen it because I was at E3, and I came over to Mazer's place when we were recording the podcast, and I just opened up the site real quick, and I was like, what? Like, I opened that and was like, you've got to be kidding me. So I don't really know how I feel about it yet. I haven't really had much time to kind of let it sink in, but just the fact that, all right, that's a lie. I know how I feel about it. I'm kind of with you where the 2007 Ghost Rider film was pretty terrible. Dr. Venkman, I did not really appreciate that very much, with the exception of Sam Elliott as a cowboy, which is the only role Sam Elliott ever plays, but he does it brilliantly all the time. The guys who directed Crank and Crank 2 and Gamer and whatever the hell else they've directed... These guys are insane, and they were originally set to direct Jonah Hex, and I was excited about Jonah Hex at that point. When they jump ship, I jump ship on Jonah Hex, even though I kind of like the source material. I've read a few of those comics and really dig the whole kind of Western vibe or whatever, but that's neither here nor there. The Ghost Rider, I think they might be able to give me a Ghost Rider sequel starring Nicolas Cage that I would actually care about, which is more than I can say for a lot of other directors. And even the fact that those guys and their kind of hyper-kinetic, ridiculous style could give me some interest in it might be worth, like, you know, kind of redefining your expectations on the movie, I think. I read your post and you seemed kind of like, just screw this movie.
I'm still like that.
But do you not see the potential of Neville Dean and Taylor?
I said it in the post. I'm like, maybe this, you know, maybe the Ghost Rider movie needs an adrenaline boost that only these guys can provide.
Yeah, I mean, his character, Johnny Blaze, or whatever, it's been so long since I've seen the movie, so forgive me, but I think it's Johnny Blaze. It was
he's a daredevil.
Yeah, exactly, like a motocross superstar, or whatever, yeah, a daredevil, and...
Which is, I do not believe Nicolas Cage for half a second. I can see him in cars, but not, you know, motorcycles.
Yeah.
Honestly, to be completely honest with you, if Nick Cage wasn't going to be involved with this, I might be a little excited for it. But the fact that Nick Cage is coming back to reprise his role,
it feels like
it turns me off completely.
I don't know. Ghost Rider was far from Nick Cage's worst performance of the past 5 years. You got to admit that. I think the fault with Ghost Rider was the script and the direction by Mark Steven Johnson, who did Daredevil.
Probably some casting.
And
what was Eva Mendez doing there?
I don't know.
Has she ever done anything where I am so glad if she's in this film.
No, not really, I guess. That's a good point. But I don't know. Nick Cage was passable. He was believable to me. And not as an action junkie daredevil, but as Ghost Rider, he was believable. That was the least of my problems with the actual film. I just thought the script was pretty terrible, and it was just another like
Yeah, like, obviously it doesn't matter.
Subpar, yeah, superhero movie at the time, but
obviously it doesn't matter because he has a flaming skull through the whole thing. So it doesn't really matter who he is.
Right.
But if the person who, I mean, who is Johnny Blaze, should be a character. I mean, an actor who's interesting on the screen, and I just feel like Nicolas Cage, unless he is playing someone completely insane, is boring to watch.
Yeah, but at the same time, this movie, instead of tracking the quote-unquote origin of Ghost Rider, well, he'll already be Ghost Rider in the second one, so he could conceivably be completely insane at that point, and seeing him be able to embrace that insanity for an entire film might give off a completely different vibe than the first film did. I don't know. I'm giving this film the benefit of the doubt because I kind of like Neville Dean and Taylor, even though I absolutely hated Crank 2. I don't know if you guys saw the movie, but I just thought it was terrible. I thought it was like over the top for the sake of being over the top, while the first Crank was over the top for the sake of being fun. And I loved the first Crank. The second one, I couldn't stand. But I'm giving this movie the benefit of the doubt because Neville Dean and Taylor are good writers when they want to be, and okay, that might be giving them a bit much credit.
I just have, but my thing is, I have a problem with the Ghost Rider character as a character.
Yeah, I never read any of the comic books. Yeah. I never got connected to it in any way, but I never did with Iron Man either. And I'm not saying that I like Ghost Rider nearly as much as I like Iron Man, but I'm not saying that Ghost Rider is my least favorite comic book character either. So, I don't know. I feel like it has the potential because Neville Dean Taylor, I feel like when they sign on to a project, they freaking commit to it, and they take a pass at the script, and they just completely, with their, like, insanity, they get in there in every single aspect of the filmmaking process and, like, rework it from the inside out. And I think that's the only hope that this movie has of being good, I think.
I agree with both of you completely, because, I mean, what are you going to do with a guy who has a flaming skull, who drives a motorcycle, and is only the ghost at night, and he uses chains, and he has powers from hell?
Yeah.
There's no emotion to put on the skull, because it's a skull, but you can kind of flex it a little bit, and it's just,
yeah.
I mean, who's the villain? That is the bigger question for me.
I think it was Mephistopheles, which was like Satan himself or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or I think Mephistopheles is like an actual Marvel character. I'm not well versed in Marvel mythology. So
but even
really
even
sure,
then,
but
like it just.
Well,
like,
you better start studying up, boy.
Ghost Rider seems like he's the villain, and it just.
Yeah. Just from looking at him.
I would be more excited to see another Punisher film because I can see that. A guy fighting people with guns. Okay.
Yeah.
But Flamin' Dude, like, what?
Yeah.
Who even fights this guy? What villain are you going to see credibly go up against Ghost Rider and go, oh, I believe that they would fight against Ghost Rider?
Well, this isn't a movie that's reaching for the realms of believability.
Yeah. So I think if they just go in like they did with Crank, it's just full haul, let's make it where, like, every moment you see on screen is a moment in real time. Let's go. 2 hours on screen is 2 hours in the real world. Let's make Ghost Rider go
That'd
insane
be cool.
And
like
fight.
From a Dusk Till Dawn type of scenario. Even
yeah.
like one night or something. But the 2 hours thing is a cool
yeah,
concept
just
too.
Just compress it down like 24 style.
Yeah, and throw some cameras on like high speed remote control cars like they do and just get those like crazy angles and stuff.
Yeah,
that's why
just,
I think.
Just do something crazy.
Yeah.
But just make it purely an action piece, because I don't know where you would go with a story with this character. And you don't have to. Just have him kill people. And set things on fire.
P-Mater, did you ever see the Ghost Rider film from 2007?
No, and once, the minute you, like, compared it to Daredevil, I was like, all I needed to hear. I was like, I hated Daredevil, and
Daredevil's a way more interesting character.
He actually is probably,
but if the same guy wrote and directed Ghost Rider, then that's all I need to know. Although, I don't know if I said this last week on the podcast, but I think I said regarding Karate Kid that I saw Jaden Smith and Justin Bieber doing a song about it, so that's all I needed to see, and I didn't have to see Karate Kid.
Right.
They do rap. and that song is at the end of The Karate Kid, but you don't even notice it.
Yeah.
It's so in the credits.
I'll eat my words on that one.
No, yeah, I was giving Jaden Smith crap last week, too, for his performance in The Day After Tomorrow. But as Mazur so very wisely pointed out, and this is something that stuck with me all week, he said, every actor's got a bad movie. And I'm like, all right, that's actually a really good point. So,
in fact, that was a bad movie for everyone involved.
Yeah, that was every actor's bad movie in that sense, yeah.
Including John Hamm for... Why was he in that film? Oh, I don't know. But this film just the character puzzles me.
Yeah,
and I just imagine they're gonna have another thing where Ghost Rider is driving his motorcycle on the side of a building.
Yeah,
and there's gonna be several jumps, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see. I think they're just in early talks. Is that right, Dr. Wegman?
Yes,
posturing for the. For the directorial chair.
Nothing is set in stone.
All right.
Yeah. I say, sell me the villain.
But, yeah, that should be interesting. I'm not looking forward to it, though. You know, it's just me, though.
How about this? Ghost Rider is in... Remember Constantine, where he's in hell? Ghost Rider in hell.
That might be better.
Ghost Rider v. Constantine.
Yeah.
Straight to Sci-Fi Channel.
That would be interesting.
There you go. All right. So how about we talk about upcoming movies, give our little Geek Tyrant pick of the week for what's coming out this weekend. We've got Jonah Hex and Toy Story 3. I want to see both of them, but I got to say I'm a little more excited for Toy Story 3. What do you guys think?
I kind of verbalized my thoughts on Jonah Hex just a minute ago.
You really
have much interest in seeing it. And I don't know. I'm not even really going to talk
only
about
it.
Only if
Jonah I Hex. Hear good things.
Alright, so there you go. There you go. Jonah Hex is not doing well with our panel.
As far as Toy Story 3 goes, I wouldn't go as far as to call myself a Pixar fanboy just because I don't highly anticipate the release of their next trailer or whatever. Like, I'm not that into it. I do generally really, really like Pixar films. Toy Story 3, though, I'm sorry, I just don't have any interest in it. Like, I'm done with the Toy Story franchise. It was years ago for me. Years ago for everybody.
You're breaking my heart here, kid.
I know. I feel like just such a cynical old man or something, but it's like, I don't know, maybe I'm just at the age where the first Toy Story came out when I still considered myself a kid, and I could kind of, I don't know, just charting my age as the Toy Story franchise has gone along, I'm just at a point now where it doesn't really matter, like, maybe if I were just going into college or something like Andy's character is in the film, then I would have a little bit more connection to it, but I'm past that, like, personally, so I just don't have that same connection to it that I felt years and years ago. I don't know how the rest of you guys feel about it, but...
Okay. Well, I'm excited for it.
Yeah. I am excited for it. I went and... did that whole thing where they re-released the first two films and it was a double feature, and I was blown away by how good those stories were, because it in my memory was not as good as these films are. And I think that the writing for all the Pixar films is unbelievable. For them to even consider doing a third one realistically, because I know previous to Pixar quote being bought by Disney, Disney was going to do their own Toy Story 3, and Pixar was very against it. For them not to can the idea and to go back and say we're going to make a third one, I think this story has got to be really amazing, because the first one was amazing, and the second one even better than the first one. And if this is any clue to the third one, I think the third one's going to probably be the strongest out of all of them. I'm in the same boat as Ben. I feel like I'm a Pixar fanboy, but I don't automatically love their films. for me. My least favorite films of theirs are like Wall-E, A Bug's Life, and I haven't even seen Cars because I've heard so much bad stuff about it. It's like, I'm not even going to bother watching
it. Yeah, me neither.
So,
I've seen that movie countless times.
But, I mean, I love so many of their other films. You know, I love Toy Story, The Incredibles. I love Up.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm missing a film. Monsters, Inc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just seeing their story development process, if it's not good, it just doesn't make it out of there.
Yeah.
So,
what do you think, Peter?
I think my opinion probably lies in between both you guys. Like Mazur was saying, I have the, you know, I know that the movie will be good because, like he was saying, Pixar doesn't really put out bad stuff. But in the same sense, I'm kind of just like bored with the whole Toy Story as like a route for stories. I don't care anymore about Buzz Lightyear and Woody, you know? And, you know...
I think pop... Intelligent...
You guys all grew up, man.
Yeah, I feel like...
You guys all grew up.
I feel like intelligently, the filmmakers would take that into account.
Yeah, I think so.
And on our own expectations in the same way Andy, or whatever, who, you know, whatever way they're moving it, would, you know, move on.
Yeah, and I've actually heard really good things about the film from early screenings at I think like CES or one of the Vegas conventions a while back. They screened it there and people were loving it. And
we have our own review from Lola on Geek Tyrant.
Yeah, she recently saw it. That's right. Yeah, she really liked it a lot. But yeah, and like people just across the internet, people have been saying that they like openly weep in the last half an hour of the film because it's so good. And, you know, like we said with Up and Pixar and stuff, I don't imagine them to be lying about that. Really do think it'll probably be good. I just, my personal interest in it isn't really there anymore.
The relationship has not been kindled for quite a while.
Yeah, that's true. And it also helps in your case that you went back and saw those two films back to back in a double feature
in the
theater. Yeah,
and I think I felt like you,
them in years.
A lot of just like, really? But having gone back and reconnecting with these characters, I am super excited.
Cool.
And by the way, Wall-E is the best Pixar movie.
You know,
I really dug Wall-E also.
Wall-E, I can respect what it did, but for me, it just wasn't my taste. For me, I my favorite is like The Incredibles.
Yeah, I like The Incredibles a lot as well.
And I actually really like Monsters, Inc. too.
My favorite Pixar film is Ratatouille.
That's a good one. It's underrated, I feel.
That is a great film.
Just saying, just throwing that out there for you folks.
I knew I left one off.
All right, so my pick of the week is Toy Story 3, so, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing it. Other than that, we're going to kind of close up the podcast here by telling you to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and listen to us all the time. Over and over again.
Nonstop loop.
Just a nonstop loop, you know. Enjoy that because you'll have fun. And there's always little hidden nuggets in there that you might not catch the first time.
if you play it backwards, we say something completely different. So.
It's amazing if you play it backwards.
I'm going to try that when I get home, actually.
It's like a different language.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Make sure to fan us on Facebook at facebook.com/GeekTyrantFans. Join the revolution there. You can also join the Geek Tyrant Revolution on Twitter at Geek Tyrant. Follow us, fan us, enjoy us, you know. That's what we're here for. Anyway, thank you very much for listening to us. We really appreciate it. Thank you for coming to the site and reading our stuff. Keep coming. Tell your friends. Spread the word. And, appreciate it. Thank you very much. And goodbye, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.